of sleeping in on Sunday mornings.
Take this on-ramp.
What?
I said take this on-ramp.
Hey, what are you doing?
It's called living. Get to know it.
Where are we going? Road trip!
Welcome to the Objective Secure Podcast. My name's Mike.
And I'm Emma.
And today this is episode 11, Travelling Light. And we're going to talk about travelling for gaming tournaments and conventions and how to get your miniatures there safe and maybe what some of the benefits are for those travelling to faraway places to play tabletop wargaming.
Yeah, so this is basically how can I sell this to my other half that it's a good idea that he, she, they should actually let me go to these events. And then how can I get my models there safely and in the best possible way?
And then hopefully home again one piece.
Yeah, but once you've used them, is it really important if you get them home again afterwards?
Yeah.
I guess it depends whether you win or lose with them.
It also depends on how much you want to let me spend to replace them.
Yeah, travel insurance.
So we're going to cover some of the popular carry cases that are in the industry at the moment. We're going to talk about some of the trips that I've made to play gaming across the years and in different parts of the world. And we also host our own little road trip here in Western Australia that heads down about 4-hour drive south of Perth down to Albany, one of the southernmost points of Western Australia. And we do that every March. Our next trip is about a month away now.
I'm not sure you can say every March. We've done two trips so far.
One
was in May and the other one was in March.
It's in
so
every
we are
March.
We're going March
we're going
now,
March.
But yeah, at the moment it's a 50-50.
So we're going to cover a few bits and pieces. And look, this is our first episode for 2018.
And it's the first episode in this new format, isn't it?
Yeah, we've certainly tried to make it more engaging for our audiences. We hope you'll find the twin format of two hosts every episode be a bit more engaging and allow you to ask some questions of us as well as we go, and we can answer them in future episodes.
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways that you can do that. Obviously, you can get in touch via email, you can message us. Facebook is a great way to get in touch.
There's a contact us on the website as well.
Yep.
All the usual links are at the tail end of the episode and in the show notes. If you head to the objectivesecure.com.au, you can find links there as well. But since we are now in 2018, we had a very busy end of 2017, which we should probably very quickly cover because I don't remember when the last episode was actually published. It must have been before show.
Yes, most definitely.
For those who aren't aware, show, the SHO or the Southern Hemisphere Open, was our first attempt at a gaming convention here in Perth, Western Australia.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of other cons that happen in Perth, but they're primarily focused on role-playing and science fiction and a bit more pop culture orientated as well. So our goal was to really replicate some of the larger conventions around the world, focusing on tabletop gaming and board gaming in particular.
We did also want to make sure that we had role-playing game
and card games.
And card games represented at that as well, because I think there's a huge section of the gaming community that doesn't necessarily know about other sections of the gaming community. So trying to get everyone all together and share what WA has to offer was really our main goal.
Yeah, and we had 3 days of fun. We had, a dozen different tabletop tournaments across those days. We had a whole bunch of demo games. We had the local clubs come out. We had Black Library author David Annandale come across for 48 hours from Canada, which was a crazy trip for him.
It really was. I think it took him 36 hours to get here.
It was 28 and 38.
Oh, that's right. 28 hours to get here. He was here for just under 48 hours.
And then 38 hours back.
Oh, man, what a weekend for him.
He was amazing. He was really lovely and very accommodating with us. And we obviously accommodated him to make sure that he got home when he needed to for work.
Yeah, of course, we don't know what he's like if he's not completely jet lagged and running off. So we're going to assume he's a lovely man, jet lagged or not.
He has been while I've been chatting to him after the event, but it was great to have him over here. So we really appreciated him taking the flight over.
Yeah, and a lot of the feedback, I was just going through a lot of the testimonials that people gave us for the event and the number of times that David's name came up. Oh, thank you so much for having David Annandale over. It was awesome to meet him. Such a lovely guy. Yeah, just blew us out of the water, really.
Yeah, so we also had another author, a local celebrity, Paul Kidd, who writes a lot of fantasy novels. He's, in my world at least, best known for writing for TSR and Wizards of the Coast for some of the Dungeons and Dragons books.
Yeah.
And he was a lovely guy to come along as well. He's a Perth local, it turns out. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, fantastic guy. And again, he was just really friendly. He was happy to answer questions that anybody had.
Ran an RPG session as
well. He ran a couple of RPG sessions, did a couple of panels for us, and really open to talking to people about writing RPGs, different things within the role-playing community and world. So,
He's also just published a new game, D20 to Yuma, which he's published through Kitsune Press, which I'll find a link and put in the show notes as well. So he's been fantastic to learn from and to be around for show and then post-show. So very, very much hoping that he'll attend the 2018 as well. We also had Games Workshop come along. We had Advanced Airbrush come along,
and we were the first place in the world to have Shadespire.
Yeah, we had that nearly a month before the rest of the world, which was really cool, and meant that Perth locals got a chance to try the game out. And I know that the staff were really keen, and they didn't open the box until the day before, which was a very strict rule that they'd been given. So that was really cool to have the Games Workshop guys come along and support the event. I know that the local guys, all the store managers, were really, really pushing for us to get it off the ground. And when Games Workshop Australia signed off to attend, it was amazing. So very, very big thank you to Games Workshop Australia and to the local store managers for helping us out.
And the store staff.
Absolutely.
Male and female. I forgot the female the first time that I said that.
If you ever want to listen to Galen or see her on our show, she's actually the first video battle report for 2018.
Which will be going out on Friday the 15th.
16th.
Friday the 16th of February.
She says that now. I haven't finished the edit yet.
I know, that's why I'm saying it. If I've said it, it has to happen. And if I keep talking, you can't clip it out. We need to do this seamlessly.
That's enough of a pause. Moving on. So we also had Advanced Airbrush Studios come along. He's Wayne was amazing. He came out with a couple of a helper and his partner, and they did some airbrush courses for us. They had a big mural that they designed and did from the 40K
And
artwork.
The mural was amazing. I'm so sorry. I'm really struggling to remember the other guy's name who was doing the airbrushing. Really amazing guy, and I can't remember his name, but he airbrushed on a dead fly, and it was just the detail that he managed to get on this dead fly was just, it just blew me away. So,
do we have a photo of that?
I do have a photo of that.
We might put that in the show notes as well then.
That means I've got to find the photo of that, but yes, I do have that.
Well, if you're going to make me do something, I'm going to make you do something. We also had Pick Pals who came along, which was an interesting addition to the event.
Yeah.
I think a few people sort of raised some eyebrows, but the amount of people that went and bought these puzzle locks to learn how to pick locks and sat there for literally hours playing with these puzzle locks was quite incredible. So I'm sure that sort of puzzle game mentality translated from the tabletop or from the board games over into their world, and I think that was fairly well received.
Yeah.
And then we also have to say thank you to Little Robot.
I was just about to say, I think our son's favourite part of the whole weekend was, and they went every day for the 3 days that we were there, was going over and making the Gundam with the Little Robot stall, and the guys who came along from the Gundam groups
Perth Gundam Club,
to actually take him through how to make it and showing him all those skills. He had an absolute ball, and he was just had the Gundam out yesterday and was, you know, repainting them and changing them up. So
Look, and it was great to see that crossover as well. There's always hobbyists who go down that rabbit hole before or after they go to tabletop. It sort of one tends to lead to the other in some cases. And the guys at Little Robot, they're out in Myrie here in Perth, Western Australia. And they do a fantastic job of supporting the community locally with a massive range of all the different Gundams that they stock. Not just the current stuff from my childhood. And it's not priced out of the world. So it's good to see that they're supporting the local hobbyists here in Perth.
When I was out there last time, it just makes me smile because one of the guys was there and they'd got a new, I think it was a unicorn had just come in. And
not literally a unicorn for those playing at home. That's just the code name for the Gundam.
Oh, I thought it was literally a unicorn.
No, it's not literally a unicorn.
Oh, now I'm a bit disappointed. Anyway, this had come in and there were two of them. So he had to buy both of them. One so he could paint it and the other one so he could just have it on the shelf just so he knew that he had it. And I just thought, yeah, that so fits with just about every gamer that I've ever met. So, yeah, kind of mentality crosses across all boundaries in gaming.
They had a 1/6 scale that came in of one of the Gundams and the box that it came in would have struggled to fit on our dining table. It was enormous. Yeah. And it's all still plastic cast models. But what I've really enjoyed learning from them is actually some of the panel lining stuff they do, which I'm now experimenting with because it's not until you step out into some of the other parts of the hobby world that you start learning about other techniques and other materials that can be used. And the panel lining I'm experimenting with at the moment, I've got 48 hours to paint an army, and that is going to be instrumental in me finishing that army. So,
And that's one of the reasons that we were hoping to get that crossover as well, is that I think sometimes you get so stuck in the habit of this is what I've always done, this is how I learned to do it, so this is how it needs to be done. But actually, when you get people together who have not necessarily always done things the same way, there's that opportunity for people to be able to learn from each other and to grow and to add new techniques. We were hoping to see some of that crossover and skill sharing.
Talking to the guys from the Gundam Club and obviously from Little Robot, they were really interested in some of the techniques that the tabletop gamers were using for painting and for hobby because it's stuff that they'd not necessarily ever considered there's new products and new paint ranges and new materials that you can use. And there's a lot of that. I mean, we discovered another supporter of the event was Hobby Tech Toys out in Myrie. Mm. And we got a bunch of prizes for our painting competition that we ran at show. And I'm now a fairly regular visitor at their store because there's just such a huge variety of tools and products out there in the marketplace that you get used to going to, whether it's Games Workshop or your favorite Games website World or whatever it is to buy your paints or for us in Perth, there's a local hobby store Tactics in Perth.
Yep.
And you don't kind of realize what the range and opportunity is outside of what you've always done. So it's been great to head out to Hobby Tech and get their advice. I've been mucking about with different airbrush paints. And like I say, some of the panel lining stuff for the Gundam kits as well. So
yeah, and that was one of the things with having Wayne come and do the airbrush workshops. He had never used the same kind of hobby paints that all of the guys who were in there have always used, which meant that he was teaching them techniques that you could do with this totally different range of paints. And he's exposed these gamers to paints that they wouldn't necessarily have seen any other way.
Yeah. It helps that Wayne's got family members who are hobbyists as well. So he had some experience with scale miniatures.
I think it helps that way, but I think it also helps that he wasn't necessarily restricted to to within this box of this is what hobbyists use, so this is what I need to teach with.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was show 2017. 2018's looking bigger and better and hopefully more awesome than ever.
Hmm.
And you'll probably hear more about that as the year goes on. Then we had our end of year 40K event, which was Masters, which was our 2-day, just shy of 60 players turned up for that one. And a bit manic and 2250 points was probably our third or fourth, eighth edition event.
Yeah.
A few little teething issues here and there, but I think the event ran really well. Lots of happy people winning prizes and 2 days of gaming. And then we hit 2018 and we moved straight into First Blood.
Yep, which we've just had, it feels like just, 3 weeks ago now?
4 weeks ago, something like that, yeah. We had 86 signed up for that and 6 for what we called Young Bloods.
Yep, so that was the under-18 players who were also playing 40K. The under-18s event, 750 points on a 4x4 table, whereas the First Blood event was played on a 6x6 table. And 6x4 table, and that was 1,000 points.
Yeah, it was. So patrol detachments in both cases, and mono-faction as well. There was no soup lists allowed. So it's an intro event for our season. It lets everyone come out and play with new projects that they might have picked up over Christmas or that they wanted to start and work on. It's a much more hobby orientated event because half your score is out of hobby.
Yeah, there's a lot of soft scores in that one as well. But there's wrap-ups for the Young Bloods event, the First Blood event, and Masters that are on the Objective Secured
website
on the blog there. And there's photo reels as well. There's photo reels for Masters and photo reels for First Blood, but I did combine the Young Blood to have a couple of photos in their one as well.
So we had over 90 people in that room, and it was at that moment we realised we've got a little bit more space than we thought.
Yeah, we can have 112 in there.
110?
112. We can have 112 players in that room.
So that obviously means more terrain and tables, which sucks.
No, it doesn't, because we've got more terrain and we bought extra tables. So
yeah, it still sucks. I don't like
that. We bought extra boards. We do need to work out about tables.
So yeah, there's a whole other set of logistic issues that we hit now.
Yeah.
But what's really cool is that... you know, when you've got 90 players in the room, and we had a waiting list of 20-something people as well, when we hit the sellout point because we weren't sure what we could accommodate.
Well, one of us was sure what we could accommodate, and one of us was feeling incredibly nervous and didn't think that we could take more than 80, but we won't say which one of us.
One of us knew that we didn't have the resources to do more than what we did.
And one of us thought that we could get them, but anyway.
So the fact we could have easily broken 100 players at that event was a bit mind-blowing considering where we are in the world. Like, we were in Perth.
Yeah, it was interesting. We went to an event last night and they were saying Perth is the most isolated capital city in the world.
In the Western world it is, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, to be getting players of that number in what is supposed to be the most isolated capital of the world is pretty awesome.
The pessimistic part of me thinks we've just got nothing better to do because of where we are. But but what's really cool about it with First Blood in particular was the standard of hobby in the room. The fact that we put some fairly strict guidelines in place. If you've seen the Warhammer World community guidelines for when you play events or attend Warhammer World to play games, they've got minimum painting standards. Ours are a little bit lower than that. We're a little bit more lax than Warhammer World, but we still require painted models. You can't come in with unpainted models or undercoated models. They actually have to be painted. And the fact that we had the room full of painted armies was just incredible. It was really good to see. We had some fantastic looking armies. Some of the local hobbyists really turned it on for the smaller games. We had some reasonable spread of armies. We had a couple that weren't represented, but it wasn't dominated by any.
I think there were only three that
weren't represented. We had Sisters of Battle not out. We had Harlequins not there. I want to say there was something else, but I can't.
There was another one. I can't remember, but it's in the article that I wrote anyway. So if you're interested in stats around what was represented and what wasn't and what sort of percentages we had for each different...
all the attendees and the winners and whatnot. Yeah. We then, only about a week ago now, had our first Age of Sigmar event as well for the year.
Yeah.
8 Lamentations, 1,250 points, 4x4 boards, 5 games. Had 32 sign up and then 30 turn up because two of them were sick. But we had 5 games over the course of the day, another really hectic one, and it's something that we found for both these events is that running a 5-game event is in one day in particular is just really hard work.
I think, because the games were 90 minutes, weren't they?
Yeah, 90 minutes.
And 90 minutes just got, for us as TOs, and I'm imagining for the players as well, but 90 minutes just goes so quickly and you think, okay, I'll just get this round underway and then I'll quickly go and do whatever the next job is that you need to do. And then you're like, what the hell? How is this game finished?
I'm giving a half-hour warning now. Yeah.
How do we now need to be getting ready for the next round? I haven't even... And for the First Blood, obviously the biggest thing for us was having to try and do the painting scoring, to do painting scoring for 90 players. In such short brackets of time,
yeah, it was very
tricky
hard
for us.
Yeah, I mean, we ended up using a laptop to score 8 Lamentations, partly off the back of Best Coast Pairings, which have been amazing for us for over a year now. But for the week of First Blood, which is the week prior to LVO, for some reason there was an error in the data which wouldn't let me extract the results.
Yeah.
Which meant that at the end of that event, before we could hand out the overall winners, I had to manually re-enter all of that data into the software that we've used as a backup in past. So that made the day even more stressful.
Yeah.
And we finished quite late. Whereas with 8 Lamentations, we elected to go down the road of just using the software because we couldn't be sure what was going to happen. So we'll do some more testing. We've been talking to the guys at BCP. They've been really awesome in feedback and taking our information. So hopefully that'll get resolved for later in the year when we do need to go back to using it really because it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and having to go back to paper score sheets was just... It's funny, you get a bit spoiled using the apps, don't you?
So next event, though, is one that's relating to today's episode, which is Linebreaker.
Yeah, this is my favourite event of all of the events that Warhammer we run. Camp. Well, yeah. So I do actually want to run a Warhammer camp, so I don't want to call this one Warhammer camp, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, this is a Warhammer camp in the literal sense, where everyone jumps in a car on a Friday afternoon. We drive down to Albany.
It's about 4 hours for us, 5 hours from people who are north of the river.
North of Perth, yeah. It's 4.5 with the trailer, dragging all the boards and the terrain and everything down.
Longer if the caravan in front of you has a tyre blowout and rips half the caravan off, and you've got to help them clean up the caravan off the ride.
That was an interesting half-hour sidetrack last year, yeah.
Yeah.
So we go down to one of the local scout halls down in Albany. So they're bunk beds and fairly sparse living arrangements, but you can take a blanket and a pillow and, you know, a sleeping bag.
We really recommend you take a blanket and a pillow and don't think, I'll find a motel.
Yeah, don't do that. The amount of people that have come down and had a wee bit too much to drink, decided it's not safe to drive, which we completely support and appreciate, and then elected to just sleep on the mattresses and then realize how cold it gets. In
particularly
Albany.
In May.
Yeah. Bring a blanket and a pillow. But,
and the person who did that, who, if you're listening to this, you know who you are. No, you are never going to live that down.
No.
We are going to hold on to that forever.
So, we go down. We play a one-day tournament. It's a fairly relaxed tournament when you actually get right down to it because we do stay at the venue.
Yeah.
So, it means that the games can be a little bit more casual, a little bit longer. It means that we can have dinner as a group. It tends to mean there's a fair bit of alcohol consumed because no one needs to drive anywhere. And then
you do not have to drink alcohol. You can come down and stay
sober. It's kind of a ritual now, 2 years in a row.
You can come down and stay sober. Just saying.
Says you.
I stayed sober.
Well, says you.
Yeah.
And then everyone packs up, cleans up on the Sunday morning, and we all jump back in the cars and drive home.
Yeah.
So obviously as TOs, that the logistics of doing that, we had 28 players last year.
Yep.
And the logistics of managing all the boards and terrain, that 4 hour drive down, it's only 14 tables, which doesn't sound like a lot until you realize that there's 6x4s with mats, with terrain that goes with them. Mm-hmm. It's a full trailer.
Yep. And food and all that
because
stuff
we do cater it as well for players. So that kind of, you know, going from there, we've still got WATC, which is not far away, which is going to be a huge one. It's 6 players per team, and we do an ETC style event where teams play teams, and that was really big for us last year. That was our biggest event in 2017, and this year looks like it's going to be even bigger.
Yeah, we're hoping to beat last year's.
Last year was 72 players, and with First Blood being the benchmark now.
Yeah, that's it. So, I don't know. I really want to try and fill the room.
We put the tickets up and had the first team ticket go in about 15 minutes. And I'm aware of at least a dozen teams that want to play. So, we should easily hit the 72 and then hopefully more.
Yeah, I'm aiming for 18 teams just to, you know.
I thought it was 16.
No, you wanted 16. I wanted 18.
I've put 16 in the we'll see how many we sell.
You better add another 2 tickets.
So, as you can see, and then we've still got plenty more events. You can find all of our events on the event calendar, either on our Facebook page or on the website. And we are including all of the local hobby events as well, where we get notified by the clubs or by whoever's running it.
We're happy to put any of those events on that calendar. So, if you do have an event happening, just let us know. Send us through a quick blurb and a couple of links, and we can whack that on the calendar for you.
One thing I do have to do very quickly is I've got 2 very quick shout-outs before we take our first break. The first one is to Jake and Matt down in Bunbury,
mm-hmm.
who under the banner Beyond Games and Hobby ran their first 40K tournament. They've got an Age of Sigmar one in about a week's time, I believe, as well. But they ran their first 40K event. We took 10 guys down. It's about an hour and a half from our house, probably 2.5 from north of Perth. And we drove down to Bunbury for a day tournament, 4 games, 1 day, 1,500 points. 10 Perth guys rocked up. I think there were 18 locals, which was a great way to start their first event, and 28 players.
Yeah.
Awesome day, really well organized, and the guys did a fantastic job. So congratulations to Matt and to Jake in particular for putting on such a great day. I'm pleased I went 4-for-4 undefeated.
Didn't win the event, though. Shout out to Alan, who did, who's also not going to stop milking that for at least a year till that event again.
But that's okay. Because Alan didn't play me. So, and then I've got an event this weekend, which is being run by Crags, the Cronulla Rockingham Armchair General Society, K-R-A-G-S. And they've run events now for quite a number of years, actually. Gavin and the boys have done an awesome job. They all were at a wedding last weekend, and then they've had a busy February, so this was the only weekend they could do, which is actually slotted in really well into the calendar. So we've had sort of back-to-back tournaments over the last 4 or 5 weeks, which has been really cool.
And I'm still hearing that you're not getting any games in and you've barely played 8th edition. I haven't seen you not playing.
So I'm going to head down to Crags this weekend on the Sunday, and 1,500 points one day. I think it's 4 games again, so it's not the hour and a half drive. It's about a 25-minute, 30-minute drive for me from here. So that'll be another really cool day. I know there's a bunch of guys going down for it. We should end up in the high 20s or low 30s again for attendance, which is cool. And then we all take a break. I think the next 40K one doesn't hit until April after that. So, I mean, ignoring Linebreaker, I'm talking for locals here. So, yeah, it's going to be a busy 6 months because, we've just got tournament after tournament, and then all the local clubs are cranking up as well for 2018, and it's going to be an exciting year.
Yeah, so obviously as well as the tournaments, we've got the podcast going, we've got the battle reports happening on YouTube, and then we're doing fortnightly Q&A type thing on Facebook as well. So, yeah, we've got lots of things planned for this year as well as Michael said already, trying to make Southern Hemisphere Open bigger and better than last year. So it's just all go around here.
Yeah. So look, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a second to talk about the road trips for gaming and why you should go on a road trip around the world or just...
Even just down to Albany.
Down to Albany.
Up to Albany, depending on where you are. Into Albany.
And what the benefits are of doing those sorts of trips for your hobby and for your family. Right, so let's start talking about travelling for your hobby. And it's something that I'm reasonably familiar with, and I suppose Emma is from the flip side of that that travel.
Oh, yes.
So we've, being in Western Australia, we're a long way from pretty much anywhere. So when we want to play hobby that's not local, it's inevitable that it involves a decent hike.
Yep.
So Perth is about 180 kilometres top to bottom, and it's about 80 k's inland in terms of a metropolitan city. In terms of geographics, it's big. In terms of population, not so much. So if you live down in Mandurah at the very bottom end of the metro area and you have to go to a tournament up in Joondalup, you've got a good hour and a half minimum drive.
Yeah, 2 hours drive.
From where we are, we're about half an hour, 40 minutes outside of the city south. So for us to get to Joondalup, it's just over an hour drive. And to head down to Bunbury, or Mandurah is about 40 minutes, hour and a half to Bunbury, and then 4 down to Albany. So if we want to go to a tournament in Geraldton, it's a 4.5 or 5 hour drive for us. Kalgoorlie's about 6. So we are really isolated here when people want to run tournaments outside of the Perth metro area.
Just so you know, that's Michael driving. If I'm driving to Kalgoorlie, it's 8 hours. If I'm driving to Geraldton, you can, you know, so...
Guess who you want driving, people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a long way for us to go to events. And so I guess we're kind of accustomed to having to do those trips.
I think we're accustomed to travelling, but some of the other states, they might not necessarily have such a big geographical spread. But, like, I've got friends who work in Brisbane... And they might be travelling for 3 hours to work just because they're stuck in traffic. So
yeah,
I don't know if it, like I said, there's a huge geographical spread. Public transport isn't necessarily as widely used in WA as it is in some of the other states.
Partly because of the infrastructure we have to begin with.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you go over to places like Melbourne, everything does seem to be a lot closer together. And
yeah.
You know, a lot of the friends that we have in Melbourne don't have cars because they just jump on a tram. And whereas here, I just can't imagine getting on a tram from Bunbury to Joondalup.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So, on the east coast of Australia, it's fairly common for the guys to travel between the states. I mean, Brisbane to New South Wales is only about, I think it's an hour's flight. I know Melbourne to Sydney is less than an hour's flight. Mm. And you can do those flights relatively cheaply.
You can drive as well. I mean, we've holidayed and we've driven from Melbourne to Adelaide in 4 hours. Whereas if
no, it's 8 hours.
Oh, okay. I suppose we drove from country Victoria.
Yeah, we did a fairly wide detour.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's drivable distance. Whereas if we drive from here to Victoria or here to Adelaide, we're looking at
Here to Adelaide is about a 3-day drive.
Yeah.
So we are a long way from anywhere. And obviously, if you're in Europe, you've got the benefit of being able to literally just hop on a train or a bus or drive yourself the hour or two and you're in another country potentially playing at a tournament.
Yeah.
And in America, I know that they're geographically quite well spread out, but I know that there's obviously a higher density of players, which means that you get more events happening at local stores. And then obviously, you've got a couple of the big ones like Nova and Adepticon and LVO and Bay Area Open and all those ones. So you do have a little bit of sport for choice there. So when we talk about travel for us, if it's not a car ride, it's almost always a plane.
Yeah, most definitely.
And for me, I've done the trip to the ETC back in 2012 as part of the Australian team to Poland, mm-hmm. which was a 20-something hour trip to get to Berlin, then a bus from Berlin into Poland. I've done the trip to LVO in 2017, which was Perth to Sydney with an overnight stop in Sydney and then onto Vegas via Los Angeles
mm-hmm.
and back again. And then I've done the ATC trip, which is the Australian Team Championships. I've done Hobart, I've done Sydney, and I've done Brisbane as part of that. And then I've also done, we did a trip to Sydney a few years back for another tournament as part of a family holiday. So I've carted my armies all around the world. Literally. I mean, I've had one, my Dark Eldar flew via Kuala Lumpur, Helsinki, Berlin before we got into Poland and then back again.
Yep. Without Your Dark Eldar's better travelled than quite a few people that we know.
Yeah. I mean, my Dark Eldar army also survived intact without a single breakage, which was really cool. And then I took my Corsair jet bike army to LVO in 2017 and again came back. The only breakage I had was actually on the gaming table.
Yeah.
So if you pack well and you think about your travel and you plan it all well, there's no reason why you can't go travelling. I know that for us...
Apart from, you know, the whole financial outlay that is required to travel around the world. But
yeah, that was literally what was going to be my next point, is that often the financial considerations are the biggest deal. And I know that perspective plays a lot of part in that, because for us, we were talking about CanCon, which is one of the big East Coast events that happens on the same weekend as LVO.
Yeah.
And for me here in Perth, it's actually cheaper for me to go to LVO than it is to go to CanCon, which sounds bizarre given I'm flying international and obviously the timing changes because you have to allow much greater time for the travel. But in terms of cost, LVO was cheaper. And that's quite bizarre for a lot of people to understand, because I'm assuming that the rest of the world says, oh, if I'm flying from... you know, Los Angeles to New York, the cost is going to be cheaper than flying Los Angeles to Perth.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the equivalent of what we're talking about here.
I mean, we did a trip at the end of last year and, you know, we did a few internal flights in America and they were like, you know, $150, $120 for those internal flights, compared to if you, our flight from here to LA was $1,500. So,
yeah,
well, was return though, but yeah, still.
The trip to Sydney, which was the last trip I did for the ATC a couple of years ago, was about $800 return.
Yeah.
And the trip to LVO the year after was $1,150 return. And even though there's a discrepancy there, it's so much cheaper in Vegas than it was in Sydney to stay and to eat and to live for those days. So it's a really bizarre thing for us in particular here in Western Australia, because we do have this perspective of, well, we have to travel, so we will. So most people don't arc up too much about it. So yeah, look, what are the benefits of going? From a player's point of view, it's awesome to meet new hobbyists and see new armies and play in different environments and be part of those communities is probably my biggest thing.
I think from what I've seen with the travel that we do down to Linebreaker down in Albany, which is obviously different to flying to Las Vegas or flying to Poland, but it's just, I think, on a smaller scale. So not only are you meeting different players and expanding your kind of gaming community, but it's just a totally different feel. It's not going to an event, playing an event, going home. It's like basically immersing yourself in that and spending time with the players and going out and eating with them and drinking with them and sharing stories with them and, you know, getting to know the other people who are in the room or the tent or whatever you happen to be playing in. It's yeah, so I think it's just really adding to that social aspect of it as well.
Oh, absolutely. I've still got friends from Poland that I speak to.
Yeah.
And I've met a bunch of guys at LVO in 2017 who I'm still in touch with today. I met Lawrence from Tabletop Tactics, who has invited me in for a game at some point in the future, based in London, which if we ever make it to London in the next couple of years, which is certainly the goal, then I'll take him up on that and get a game. Pascal from New Zealand, who I had never met until, and I met him in Vegas.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's coming to Perth later this year for the Australian Team Championships, which we're hosting at show.
Fantastic.
So it'll be awesome to see him again.
Yeah.
And I know he's part of the Australian team for ETC this year. So he's going to be heading, I think it's in, I want to say Croatia. I'm not sure. It might be Serbia.
It's somewhere in Europe.
It's somewhere in Europe. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So, you know, these guys who you meet at tournaments, you know, I might not see them for years at a time, but you literally pick up where you left off because you've got that common point of reference and, you know, you'll chat online or you'll see them on forums and that sort of thing. So now you've got a face that, and a personality and an experience you can attach to those people.
That's it. And I think that there's a lot of the social media happening. And that's, and we really encourage that. We encourage that to try and grow the gaming community is, you know, talking to people who are interstate or international. But then when you go along to these events and you actually are able to put a face to a name and get to know who they are in real life versus who they are on the other side of the keyboard can be a little bit different. And also I think it helps you go, oh, yeah, no, I know that guy and this is how I think he would mean that particular comment.
You can start getting inference from knowing them personally.
Yeah.
Oh, look, I mean, when I met Lawrence the night before the event, I saw him in the room. I watched his videos. Mm-hmm. I'd gone up and gone, hey, man, how are you going? It's great to see you here. And then ended up playing him game six, day two.
Yeah.
And so we'd barely, you know, we'd said hello and that was like, he was polite and all the rest of it. And I'm sure he gets that at these sorts of conventions. But by the end of it, you know, we shared a drink and we went out and, you know, we had a great time. It was, you know, I still talk to him in the lead up to LVO a year later. I was chatting to him about his army lists privately. And then, you know, we've literally spent all of a handful of hours in each other's company playing a game.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that if we walked into a room tomorrow, we could pick it up and, you know, still be friends. So
yeah.
It's one of the best parts of those travel trips is meeting all those people and being part of their community as much as them being part of yours.
And that's why I say that the Linebreaker event is my favourite event, because that event for me is not necessarily about what happens on the table. It's about what happens once the tables have been, or before the tables are out and once the tables are packed up. It's about spending that time with people and, you know, playing board games or eating together.
Against humanity.
And, yeah. eating together and laughing together. And, for me, that's what those events are about, and that's why I love them.
I know the Albany guys are really keen for us to go down and, you know, we only do it once a year. We can only do it once a year, realistically. And they try and clear their calendars and they tell their wives or their partners that, no, like, I'm busy.
Well, we've got one guy down there who's really lovely, Mark, and he brought his brother and his wife to the event last year. And he sent me a message and he's going, because we had to rearrange the date of Linebreaker because there was a double booking for the hall. And he sent me a message. Hey, do you know when this is actually likely to be? Only we're just trying to organise Lynn, his wife's, we're just trying to organise her baby shower. And I don't want to have it on the same day to conflict with Linebreaker when you guys are coming down. So, yeah, like Mike was saying, people do really make an effort to try and attend that, because obviously the Perth guys are making a massive effort to get 4 or 5 hours down south in order to be there as well. So
yeah, and it's not like they can go home at the end of the event. Like the Albany guys, there's a couple of them who don't stay. They head home and
spend time with their families. And,
yeah, so it becomes a local tournament for them. But at the same time, Ben, one of the guys down there, he hangs around as late. And then comes back and helps pack up the next day. And
a couple of them do stay overnight.
Yeah, a couple of them do. Yeah. But, you know, the whole point of that event is that it's that community that gets generated by having everyone in the same place at the same time with that common purpose.
And it's been quite good to break down some of the stereotypes and some of the barriers as well. So before we did the first Linebreaker event, there was a lot of skepticism about it because people had heard about what tournament players were like and these were Perth, you know, big city players compared to local players, and they didn't, you know, what would that be like playing against playing against the city players instead of playing against their regular mates. And kind of some of that trepidation around the fact that Perth was invading Albany.
Yeah.
And it's gone from, we've really seen a shift from that fear around it to the happy anticipation of this event.
Yeah, well, this is the first year that we've been in a position to remove some of the restrictions for the armies that people are bringing as well. I know one of the big fears that they had for the first year was Perth players bringing down the sort of the super heavy stuff from 7th edition or some of the combination armies where you used the detachments and the formations. And this year we've had the guys going, no, like, can we lift those? Because we want to bring our big toys.
Mm.
So I think a lot of the guys have sort of stepped up and gone, you know what, we know these guys now, we know what we're going to expect, we don't mind.
It's that trust, you know, you've built that trust now.
I think there's also a little bit of healthy rivalry between a few of the players as well. And
yeah,
and
definitely. And we don't encourage that in a negative way, but we do sort of encourage it a little with healthy, fun banter.
Yeah, so you know, we're going to see some new armies this year. I've had one of the locals down there, Marcus, sending me photos and things going, hey, can I use this as this, and I'm converting this, and I'm doing this. And I know that the Perth guys always enjoy the trip down just to hang out, and they get to play their games that they would in Perth now rather than Lisbon. The first year in particular, I was a bit, I was vetting some of the army lists because I wanted to make sure that we didn't set the wrong impression and the wrong standard.
That's right. It's about having that right tone, isn't it?
Yeah. So we're looking now at 2018, 3 years in, going, no, we can, here are the rules, go for it, guys.
Yeah.
And I think that that'll create a little bit more rivalry, a little bit more competition. And
but it's also meant that the guys who are down in Albany then feel more comfortable travelling up to Perth to attend some of the events as well.
Yeah, because now they're not going to be there going, oh, we've never played against X, Y or Z.
That's right.
We know what to expect from the Perth players.
And when you're walking into a room where there's 80 or 90 players, if you're the only one who's not part of that regular gaming community, it's really daunting walking into that. So by creating those connections, you're reducing some of those barriers to people actually attending events and, I guess, opening up events to a wider range of players.
Yeah, look, and I think that touches on my next point, which was travelling with friends.
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes, I mean, when I did the trip to Poland, I went with a good friend of mine, Brett, who now lives in Queensland.
And he was living in Queensland
at the time. So yeah. he flew Queensland to Perth and then stayed at our place overnight. And then we did Perth to KL, KL to Helsinki, Helsinki to Berlin, Berlin to Gorzo, and then did that in reverse a week later.
Just showing off now.
So he did an extra 5-hour flight on top of what I did. Yeah. So
you had just got back from
America we'd actually had as well. We just had a family holiday like 3 days prior before that flight, but that's okay. Yep.
That was a lot of jet lag happening.
Yeah. So part of the thing that I think most people will want to do is do it with a friend. I don't know of too many people that fly solo. I mean, Pascal, I believe. I could be wrong.
But I wonder, did he fly solo the first time? You know, like once you've done that with friends and you've made those connections in person, it's then much easier for you to go and be able to do that by yourself because you feel like you fit. You know the people who are there. You know who you can go and chat to then be able to make more connections.
Well, I mean, I had we had Brad, one of the locals here in Perth, go to LVO. I had Sam from Albany come up as well. And then he flew with me. And then I met a couple of the guys from the East Coast when we were in Vegas. And I think that had I had to go alone, I would have gone, but it becomes a bit more awkward because even in my case, like I still knew a handful of people who were going to be there that I'd organized to meet up with.
Yeah.
Through various internet channels or and sometimes past events.
Through the fact that through ETC from 2012, yeah.
So even me going over there, if I'd gone by myself, I still would have had people that I could have then sent messages to and go, hey man, where are you? Can we catch up?
Can I play with you?
Yeah. but part of that, like that for me, that's what those trips are about, is about going with your mates, and it essentially becomes a boys' weekend.
Yeah.
And
and that's what the Albany trip is as well, apart from the fact that there's a girl there.
Yeah, but like last year, the boys dragged me into a drinking competition and you just stood there bewildered.
Oh my God, you are a grown-ass man getting into a drinking competition.
And I still won.
I don't know if you should be proud or ashamed of that, to be honest.
I think everyone will agree that it's a proud moment to beat the guys that are half your age who are the ones egging you on.
I was going to say they're not quite half your age, pretty but close. Sadly they are.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
So
when did we get old?
I don't know. So no, the trips, if you're going by yourself and you do have, you know, friends online who you know are going to the same event, you'd probably be okay going by yourself. But for me personally, part of the reason I wanted to go was to go to hang out with people I know and get to share that experience with guys that, you know, you can start building that common bond of, you know, what you saw and what, you know, and then you go out at night and you have dinner and you...
Yeah, that you mean that common bond and shared love of little plastic toy soldiers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, the night when we went to Vegas, the night before the event, we went and did adventure combat ops with airsoft rifles shooting at people dressed as zombies. And that was amazing fun. That was awesome. And if I had more time there, I know there were a couple of guys going, let's go do the car racing. Let's go and do this. Let's go and do that. So it becomes...
I like that you didn't finish off what this and that actually were while you were in Vegas, but we'll leave that to the imagination.
You can do all that stuff by yourself, but there was something about sharing it with people that you wanted to spend time with that made it, I suppose, more memorable and more part of the experience. So, yeah, I really love doing those sorts of trips for gaming because you do get to do those things. And I know there's plenty of guys who bring their long-suffering partners on those trips as well, the Warhammer Widows, as we colloquially call them. Mm-hmm. And whether it's the family or just the partner... some of the guys drag them all around the world to play games, and other times I think the partners are just happy to be rid of them for 48 hours or 72 hours. Were it not for the bank balance, they might allow them to do it more often.
Yeah, see, Mike went to LVO last year as our eldest child started high school and our youngest child started kindy for the first time, and I did that by myself, and I take my hat off to single mums. There is no way on this earth that he is going away when one of our children starts school for the first time ever again.
We've already got
I'm still traumatized.
We've only got three kids and they've all started school, so I'm in the clear, guys. It's fine.
One of them, yeah, well, let's.
So, you know, those trips have always been awesome and memorable, and it doesn't matter whether it's been the road trip to Albany or whether it's been... the flights all around the world, it's something that if you get the opportunity to do, I'd strongly encourage you to do. As an example, I know one of the guys in the ITC community is looking at organising a GT in Hawaii.
Ooh.
And I think that's a massively awesome opportunity, not just for the guys to go and play a GT, but to take the family on a holiday.
Like, yeah.
If you can organise it well.
Yeah, that's what we did. I mean, Sydney and Hawaii do seem a little bit different. And I definitely want to go to Hawaii. But I'm not one to go and stand at a gaming table and watch you guys play for 2 days because I actually can't think of anything more boring at all. But I'm definitely happy to, you know, go a week before and spend time sightseeing and enjoying a holiday. You play for a couple of days, then... couple more days holiday and fly
somewhere
home.
Like Hawaii, there'd be plenty to do with the family and the kids, and you know, there's the resorts and all the beaches and all the rest of it. Like, you can easily, as long as you've got an understanding partner, sneaking away for 2 days, maybe one night to hang out with your mates and have dinner and all the rest of it, you can probably get away with, and you know, that'll obviously then potentially encourage other friends who have family to come along, and then you end up with this sort of Warhammer Widows community that starts developing in the back end of the gaming community, which I suppose is a support network when you've got kids and you've got partners who share that same experience, having another person who's in that same boat as you, who is losing your husband to the hobby every now and again, or partner, I should say. It means that, you know, you do have another point of you know, commonality, and you can share that that woe and misery with your partners going off to play with toy soldiers.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's woe and misery, more mockery. We share mockery.
Mockery?
Yeah.
Well, when we've hosted Warhammer Widows high teas for some of our events in the past, where it generally involves champagne and cake and
mockery.
And mockery. but, you know, there's a bunch of the ladies who've met at those events, and when they do see each other at events when we're not holding those, then they've obviously got someone there that they know and that they can spend time with.
Well, not even that. I mean, some of the people who I'm now friends with, I met through... those high tees. So it's, you know, it's good as well. I guess when the guys go and play, even just in Perth, then the women who know each other from those events can go, hey, do you want to go catch a movie or, you know, just catch up, have more wine.
Yeah. So yeah, look, I think there's if the GT in Hawaii does get off the ground and you are able to travel to it.
Could I just to interject. We do encourage women to actually come and play at the events too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we've got a few couples that turn up.
Yeah, definitely. I do just want to say we don't just we'll put the men in the den with their cigars and and cognac, and we'll have the women in the sitting room with their cigarettes and wine. We're really not into that whole 1950s segregation thing. We do encourage women to play, and definitely hoping to see. We've had women attend both Line Breakers, so it would be awesome to have women playing in that again.
Yep.
Although one's just had a baby and pop. So chances of those two ladies attending is pretty slim. So yeah, just wanted to say, obviously, if women want to attend these events interstate, internationally as well, there's always space for women to be playing at the tables.
I think that the community's gotten a lot better in encouraging that diversification of people attending events.
Yeah, and it's funny because we mock the men and we support the women.
Yeah. Right.
It works for me.
But yeah, look, I think there's always an opportunity there for the road trips to become family trips. And yeah. As long as I suppose that the partners in question understand that there is going to be a period of, hey, you're not going to see me for 48 hours.
Yeah, that's tricky. It is, especially when you are somewhere and you've got a child or three
or children. Multiple
children,
yeah.
Yeah, and you're kind of going, you know what? I've had these kids all day by myself in a different environment. You've been out playing with toy soldiers and now you want to go out drinking? Yeah, that's not working for me. So I get that as well. Just finding that balance.
Yeah, I think if you'd come with the kids to LVO, I think the chances of me doing what we did. So we did 3 days of gaming. We went out both nights in between day one and two and day two and three. Plus we went out the night before day one. That starts pushing the boundaries of what's reasonable potentially. Yeah. Because if there's we've got three children, looking after those three children takes time and effort.
Literally takes everything that I've got some days.
So, you have to take that into consideration and be a bit considerate with, your time. But I suppose if part of the trip is to include that, then there's also got to be a bit of give and take there as well. But I really enjoy the road trips. Albany's always amazing. But one of the biggest factors with any of the road trips for gaming is the luggage. And I'm not talking about what you need to wear, because if you're like me, you can throw a T-shirt, a couple of pairs of undies and socks in your backpack and you're good to go.
It's amazing. The international trips that Mike's done, it's probably 3-4 weeks working out how he's going to get his army there, sorting out foam and all of that kind of stuff. And then the mad dash to actually get his army built and painted, which often comes after how he's worked out how to get the army there. And then
it didn't for LVO.
About 30 minutes before the taxi's due to arrive. Have you seen this shirt? I was going to take those pants. And, that kind of thing. And then he actually starts thinking, can I get away with only 2 T-shirts and 1 pair of shorts? Which, by the way, if you're playing for 3 days, you need many T-shirts because that many men in a room. Oh, not nice. So,
mockery of the men again.
There's a lot. No, actually, that's just factual. There's,
you do need to. No, the luggage side of things is I've done a few of those flights, even for work, where you just go, I don't need to check luggage. I can chuck it all in a backpack and
all of my clothes. It's kind of going, okay, well, I'll use my luggage allowance for my models, and I'm sure I can fit my clothes in half my backpack, and then my rule books can go in there. And
oh, look, when we did Vegas and ETC, anything super heavy, like the rule books, and any of the paraphernalia that can be replaced on the fly, dice, tape measures, any of the templates or any of that sort of stuff that you don't necessarily need, along with clothes, is check baggage. Anything that's replaceable.
Yeah.
The army's carry-on, as far as I'm concerned. No, it doesn't go anywhere else. I know there are plenty of people who do check their armies. I'm a paranoid bastard. I know that. And there's no way in hell that I'm traveling for 20 hours to another country without that army in the overhead above me.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm pretty good at packing. So I know that I can get delicate, breakable things from one country to another without them breaking. You don't necessarily have the same packing style that I do.
It's got nothing to do with packing. Everything to do with paranoia.
For me, the biggest risk is that if it goes into... if I'm letting go of it, I don't know what country my baggage is going to end up in.
Exactly. And my theory was, if I got to Vegas and I had my army in one case, but didn't have my rule books, my dice, my tape measure, or any clothes, there's outlet stores, there's a Games Workshop store there.
There's however many other people there that you can borrow this stuff from.
But I can't replace my army. If I'm flying around the world to play a tournament, I cannot replace that with 12 hours notice. It's not going to happen. So as far as I'm concerned, that becomes a carry-on situation for, for any of my armies that have travelled, and it always has. It's ended me in a few arguments a couple of times. Mainly, it's actually been mainly the Australia flights. I had I had one a couple of years ago, which we'll talk about the bag I took in a second.
And I know when we flew in America recently, there's no sort of limit to how much hand luggage you can take on the plane.
Depending on the carrier, of course.
Well, we flew with a few different carriers and there didn't seem to be any limit with what you could take on. But obviously it was limited to once those overhead lockers are full, full. Whereas in Australia there's very, very rigid allowances for how much baggage you can take on.
And how big that
baggage can be. And how heavy they can be and all of those kinds of things. And it's been a long time since I've flown in Europe, so I'm not really sure what they're like.
Oh, the only problem I had with ETC with the bag, which we'll again want to cover in just a second, was on the trip back from Berlin to Helsinki, where the stewardess told me that the bag was too big. And she was right, it wouldn't go in the bins, but that's because they just swapped the plane. And it was when we checked it. And I had a letter from the airline saying, and I sent them the dimensions of the bag, and they said, yes, that would be acceptable. So I did have it in writing from the airline that it was fine to be carry-on. And she made a big fuss in performance and said it'd have to go in the crew stowage. And she didn't
I'm
know.
I'm fine with that.
And she said they didn't know if there'd be room up the front, and we've wheeled it up the front, and the stowage that they had was probably 6 feet tall. It was probably 4 feet wide, and it was a big roller door that slid from the ground to the ceiling. And when she rolled it up, there's her handbag hung on a coat hanger, and that was it.
I think we can probably squeeze.
And I looked
this
at it
in.
And gone, yeah, this is going to fit. It's fine.
Yeah.
But she was most unhappy with that.
Yeah.
And I had a similar experience.
There are amazing flight attendants. Oh, look, like
that was the one
terrible ones. It's like everything.
That
isn't
was the
there?
One part of that trip that was in any way awkward. And I had the same experience coming back from, I think it was Hobart, because we had to do a connection. We couldn't go direct to Hobart, and they weren't happy with the case that I had. And I just went, well,
in all fairness, it is gigantic.
It is a decent-sized case.
A decent-sized child in that bag.
But it met
probably
with...
Probably
don't
do that.
Officially, it met with all their guidelines and size requirements.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Well, it did at the time.
I think it was pushing it.
It probably was an inch too long or an inch too wide, but that's okay.
Or inch, 3-4 inches.
And again, the same resolution was, oh, we'll just put it in the crew stowage. Except this time around, the woman wasn't happy. She went to her flight manager, and the flight manager was amazing and just went, oh, no, that's fine. We'll just chuck it in here. And she was the one who handled it. So we'll talk about all the sizing and requirements and some of our suggestions in just a second when we cover how to transport your army for road trips. Hi guys, so I know we just before the break said that we'd be back to talk about cases and all things hobby related in traveling with your armies, but as it turns out, this episode is very, very, very long, so we're going to break it into two parts. So you can go and check out the second part straight away though, because we're going to upload them back to back. You can check out episode 11 part 2, covering a bunch of different carry cases. The links will be in the description for this episode in the show notes. We hope you enjoy this episode, and we hope you enjoy the next one as well. Cheers. You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.